Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. Books.
Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. This week, I'm talking to someone who I've wanted to talk to for a very long time, but it took until now that she's written her second novel. Her first novel, Enchantment, was written over 20 years ago. The new novel, 22 Minutes of Unconditional Love, by my guest Daphne Merkin, is recently published by Farrah, Straus & Giroux. It's a book that has been in the works for all of that time. There's a version of a crucial event in 22 Minutes of Unconditional Love in that novel, Enchantment. Daphne, tell me, what was it that held you up? What took 20 years to create this novel?
I'd go even further, Michael, and say it took 30 years. I described what I wanted to do, put it that way, to an editor who was at a press that no longer exists. And I said I'd always been interested in obsession. And the truth of the matter is, my first novel, Enchantment, I had originally described to Bill Yovanovitch, the publisher who I later worked for 5 years. I said that was about obsession, but this was to be a novel about what happens if you get involved, if you're a woman who gets involved with a man who is, in some quote, simple way, quote, very bad for you. Could be on any level, psychologically, emotionally, physically abusive, the whole spectrum. And I had read such books because it always interested me. And the woman usually ended up either dead, like Anna Karenina, or hauled off to an institution. And I was always interested in a degree of, I guess, what is called sadomasochism, not in its theatrical form, like Story of O, never much, as they say, did it for me. It's too theatrical, and Desaad is too theatrical for me. But the sort of ways in which power gets contorted in relationships interested me. I said, I want to write about an obsession. They said, fine. They gave me an advance. At that time, it was not small. In fact, now again, it is not small for a novel, which was 100,000. And I went off and wrote till page 212. I still remember. I remember the scene because the scene is in this final novel, which has the lawyer character who the woman is involved with, named Howard Rose, asks or demands that the protagonist, Judith Stone, crawl across the floor for him, naked, as some kind of tribute to her, quote, love, more accurately, his power over her. And I got to this page and I stopped dead. And I thought, just to explain, Michael, for people, I come from a observant Orthodox background, you know, completely observant, not Hasidic, what's called modern Orthodox. And I'm one of six siblings. My parents were German immigrants. And even though I had already written, I mean, Enchantment had been treated basically as a memoir. The term autofiction, which I personally could do without, hadn't been invented yet. So if you wrote very autobiographically impelled fiction, your average lay reader would simply read it as, oh, she's talking about herself. And there were many parts of the novel that were similar to my family. But if I wanted to write a memoir straight, I would have written a memoir. But all I'm saying is I had already revealed things you don't say about your family if you're a modest product of an Orthodox background.
I read Enchantment, and I think that to this day, it still reveals things that you don't say about your family. It's still rather a shocking book.
Actually, Enchantment was just, I think it's coming out this week, reprinted.
Oh, good.
By FSG. Yeah, I should have. It's been reprinted, and Vivian Gornick wrote a short introduction to it.
Wonderful. Well, I thought it's a marvelous novel and really quite entertaining as well. But you know what I wondered? You say in an essay that you're not quite sure where this interest in sadomasochism comes from. But I wondered, because in my life, this is so awful, I'm going to tiptoe around a dangerous area.
Right.
And I mean dangerous for me, not dangerous for you. In my life, the only book that my parents had that had any sexually and emotionally difficult and terrifying scenes was The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich.
Right.
And when I was reading that book, I couldn't put it down.
Right.
I was very young. I was maybe in junior high. And it brought about a whole astonished fascination with S&M. Not the horror of Nazis,
right,
but the horror of how people could do this to one another.
Right. I think that's whether you are tiptoeing, I should tiptoe back and say, I think that's actually, at least for me, has a lot to do with an interest in the possibilities of, how should we put it, brutality. My mother...
Yes.
My mother was, you know, both parents lost many, many relatives, some close, in the Holocaust. My mother had a sort of strange, I don't know if fascination is the right word. When my parents once went back to Germany, she brought back two books of photos that the Nazis had taken for themselves of Jews being ridiculed in the streets. And I would stare at these books with astonishment. And I kind of think some of the impulse to or interest in sadomasochism, I will honestly say, I think came from an abusive streak, and that's putting it mildly, within my family. You know, to say this about one's parents, even at my advanced age, sounds, you know, like you're betraying the Ten Commandments. But there was a sadistic tone to much of, to a side of my mother, had that kind of enormously objective about her own children, kind of put down the opposite of the adoring, I always thought of Eastern European Jewish parent who was thrilled about the essence of his or her child. That wasn't my mother's approach at all. My father was very, very distant. And I think some of my interest in the subject came out of a wish as they say, to like master my fascination, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely. I'm speaking to Daphne Merkin, whose most recent book, 22 Minutes of Unconditional Love, it's a novel published by Farrah Straus and Giroux. What's fascinating to me about this book is that it's a novel about obsession, but it is not itself obsessional. It's written with great clarity.
Right.
You can hear, even in the names, the care with which the two names, Howard Rose and Judith Stone, are chosen. Those long vowels, right. They're just perfect. When I heard that named Howard Rose, I said, yes, he's the perfect. It's almost like Heathcliff.
Right.
The long vowel is the perfect thing for the obsessional hero. I'm very interested in this book because it's presenting itself as a model for an obsessional novel. It isn't, in fact, an obsessional novel. In fact, it has digressions in which it discusses directly with the reader's involvement with such things. When did you decide that digression would be part of its structure?
The digressions interested me from the start, Michael, because we were discussing a little bit before we started about graduate school. One of the things that stayed with me from my own graduate school experience at Columbia, I think that's where I got it, is if you want to like put together everything that stayed with me about semiotics and deconstructionism, I loved the phrase perforating the text. I don't know where I get the phrase from, but the idea of taking something pristine and self-enclosed and then slowly bringing in outside, that always interested me. And in the very first go-round, there had been digressions or whatever I call them. So that was always there. I had many more. I played back and forth with taking them out. There was a version I tried without them because I thought, I after all had 3 decades to think about all this in, including the characters' names, which I am appreciative that you noticed because they were important to me. Escapism for me isn't, you know, some people say, well, they read beach novels for escapism. I read one summer, which is why what you're saying, Michael, resonates so much with me. One summer, I end my memoir on about depression called This Close to Happy, that I'm lying in a garden reading a book about an enormous comprehensive book about concentration camps called K.L. for Lager. It came out in translation, I think from Farrah Straus. It mesmerized me. It covers every single concentration camp, including ones you and I would never have heard of. It's a remarkable book, but I hate to say this, it sounds perverse, but for me, that's escapism.
In addition to the digressions, you've made decisions about what a novel is. You tell your readers that a novel should not be 500 pages long. We're not living either in the age of Dickens or the age of George Eliot. A novel at most 350 pages is testing the reader's willingness to comply. This book, 22 Minutes of Unconditional Love by my guest Daphne Merkin, is a novel that has been strained to its essence. And the essence is a man demanding that a woman be willing to be owned by him, and a woman who has as much interest in her very nature in marrying and having a child as she does in having a perverse and demanding sadomasochistic relationship with a man who cannot love her. Yes?
Very well put. Very. That is what it comes down to. Maybe the only thing I'd add is that she's a woman who also has a strong interest in her work. It's not like, you know, she's filling her days with a job just to fill her days. She is a book editor. That part of her life, even though she often strikes an exasperated tone, which anyone would who has ever spent a day in book publishing, about the business, she's also very caught up in it. And that kind of interested me almost as like a third streak in the book. Like, what if you yourself are in the business of selling, acquiring and selling books? And within that part of the, I think of it a little bit as a triptych, within that part, she comments on the kind of books that do well. Like, there's some book she's supposed to, that's her company, her publishing house is making a big fuss about that she has acquired. That's sort of Daniel Steele-like, about some woman in the 19th century who marries up, some, you know, standard line like that. I would just add that she's a woman who essentially wants a, quote, normal-looking life, as you said, with a husband and possibly a child. She's a woman who, I would say, is torn.
And if you want to know, and I'm sure many of my listeners do, what they talk about when they turn down a very good book in a publishing meeting, well, this is the book to read. I am quite sure the 22 minutes of unconditional love gets it right. To my nightmare, I felt very fortunate that I did not go into publishing, that I had the great good luck of being given this radio show. I'm Michael Silverblatt, by the way, and you're listening to KCRW's Bookworm. I'm talking with Daphne Merkin about her new novel, 22 Minutes of Unconditional Love. We'll continue after this short break.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, this is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Daphne Merkin about her new novel, 22 Minutes of Unconditional Love, which portrays the extremes to which one might go to achieve erotic bliss and the even further extremes to move beyond it to what might be called a normal life. Tell me, is there a normal life?
I think today the word much in use is normative, to sort of separate out. Is it normal or is it the normal we're making normal? I think it's a very good question in terms of this novel, because it ends with her believing to a degree that she's leading a life that at least looks normal. And if you ask me, that's the closest we get to normal in life. Normal for her, for Judith Stone, was the achievement of a life, a family life. There was that, I think, was a big emphasis. And she wasn't going to achieve anywhere near a family life with Howard Rose. Their whole relationship was about being outside that orbit, being on an island of their own where he could say, do I own you now? Which, as we can surmise, does not lead into domesticity or becoming parents. But at the very end, the obsession has been, quote, fixed.
It's been lifted.
Yes. But it still hovers, it lurks.
Now, I want my listeners to hear a little bit more about Daphne Merkin, because as I read your two books of essays, Dreaming of Hitler and The Fame Lunches, I discovered that even when you're reviewing books, you're never neutral. You're bringing a good deal of your past into your subject matter. And you've commented that people who've read your essays, certain ones in particular, come wanting that Daphne Merkin. Which Daphne Merkin am I talking to?
All of them today. It's so strange, Michael, that you put it that way, because whether I'm writing about Marilyn Monroe or lip gloss, I always feel it is me, to bring up the essay that, as I mentioned to you when we talked, has haunted me forever. The one I wrote for The New Yorker years ago, but some people act like I wrote about it yesterday, about erotic spanking, which when it appeared in The New Yorker, you would have thought a tiny bomb had been dropped in a certain literary, tiny, self-involved circle, that a piece about this subject could appear in The New Yorker. The piece was a mixture of literary, I certainly hope, begins with my discussing my bookshelves, and also quite explicit. I will say that sexually explicit, the combination of the cerebral and the, whatever word, carnal, graphically, fleshly, has always interested me. First of all, I don't think women do it a lot. And that was an issue even with that essay. One of the responses to that spanking essay, I can't even remember what year it was I a good mother? Could I be a good mother and write such a piece? I guess the implication was that I bashed my daughter Black and Blue. And I commented that no one would ask this about John Updike, about Mailer. Well, Roth didn't have children, probably good for his non-children. But the question of a woman's sexuality is, I think, applied. And if you're a writer who writes about sexuality, it in some way becomes your definition.
I have to tell you, in your first book, the novel Enchantment, the description of the buttocks of children,
yes,
as they are being spanked by a nanny, her name is Lena, I've never seen prepubescent buttocks so lovingly described.
Michael, since you're an excellent reader, obviously, You have picked, you have don't even know the extent because you are not in on my shrink sessions. You have picked what I think, if there is a linkage, it goes from exactly that part of enchantment. Lena, by the way, was the pseudonym of the woman who took care of us in my own family, who was a massive provide, you don't provide spankings, giver of spankings. I know the scene you're referring to in Enchantment. At the end of Enchantment, there's a quick preview of a relationship.
Oh, absolutely.
Blossom.
It's unforgettable.
Yeah. That is a very quick preview of the the Hannah Lehman, who she is called, adult, beginnings of her adult life with a man. It's very quick in the book. There were people who told me to take it out. And it's certainly along the lines of the sadomasochistic, the toying with. It's not even clear, although it was probably clear to you, Michael, that she is spanked in that scene. And ultimately the New Yorker piece, ultimately this novel.
22 Minutes of Unconditional Love by my guest Daphne Merkin. I hope that we will be talking to one another both on the show and off it with some frequency, Daphne. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
I enjoyed it enormously. Thank you.
Me too. Thank you. I've been talking with Daphne Merkin, author of 22 Minutes of Unconditional Love. It's published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. You can visit kcrw.com/bookworm for a podcast of today's show, also available at Apple, Spotify, and all other podcast services. We're even on, speaking of which, twice a week in Berlin. You can listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. Special thanks to co-producer Sean Sullivan, associate producer Alan Howard, and technical director Mario Diaz. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcast the most recent ones at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mail of Sparks.
A bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.